Hey, feeling unsure about your finances these days? You're not alone. That's why Noble Gold Investments is here to help. Just hear it straight from the people who they've helped. The Noble crew walked me through everything with no stress. With their help, I could finally sleep easy at night. And now this month, Noble Gold Investments is handing out a free 5-ounce silver America the Beautiful coin if you qualify for an IRA. Invest in gold and silver with Noble Gold Investments. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. Hey, everybody. Today on the podcast, Dr. Gad Saad, very interesting guy with an important book. We talk about parasitic ideas that are destroying the West. How do we win? His dispute with Lex Fridman and more. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is one of my favorite guests, Dr. Gad Saad. Doctor, thank you so much for joining the program. I want to read your tweet, if that's okay, and then we can get you to riff on it. Quote, "You're not going to like this tweet, so turn away if you are likely to be triggered. I'm a very optimistic person. I'm a fighter for Western values and liberties. I'm a dogged defender of science, reason, and common sense. I must say, though, that I'm unsure that the West can recover from its multi-front civilizational suicide. Yes, I've talked about these issues for decades and wrote a book about it in the past, but the past few weeks have crystallized the extent to which the problem has become intractable. It will be a long and ultimately bloody demise, and the West will be the first society in recorded history to fully self-implode due to its parasitic ideological rapture. It is a gargantuan Greek tragedy that will shape the future of humanity. This is not hyperbole. Your grandchildren will pay a very high price for your progressive arrogance, rooted in the pursuit of unicornia," I think I said that right, "that only exists in the recesses of deeply flawed you have to pronounce that one for me. That's not a word I use.
Parasitized.
Thank you. Parasitized. Excuse my inability to pronounce that. Gad Saad, tell us about it.
Well, you know, I was just talking to your producer offline. If your physician comes to you and says, hey, you have an aggressive cancer and here are some intervention strategies that hopefully can eradicate the cancer. And you say, no, doctor, I don't want to eradicate the cancer. Actually, there is no cancer. And here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to smoke 5 packs of cigarettes a day. I'd like to take a whiff of a asbestos bag. And maybe I can sit out in an artificial sunbed all day long. Maybe that will decrease my cancer. Now, what I'm saying here facetiously is that not only you have a complete breakdown in the ability of, you know, Western leaders to think critically, hence the parasitic mind, but they, because of that parasitized mind, they then end up doubling down on a lot of the craziness. So there is no way by which you could implement a policy to reverse the trends. And that's why I wrote that tweet.
Yeah. Well, so explain to us, how would you identify the multi-front civilizational suicide? List them out for us.
Right. So in the parasitic mind, I basically argue that there is a bunch of idea pathogens that serve like brainworms that alter your ability to think rationally, slowly leading you into the abyss of infinite lunacy. So what are some of those ideological mind pathogens? So, of course, postmodernism, I've talked about with you about this previously in the show. Postmodernism says that there are no objective truths, and therefore men can be women, left could be right, peace could be war. Hamas could be the freedom fighters, whereas Israel are the Nazi genocidal regime. There is no objective truth. So all bets are off epistemologically. How about cultural relativism? Cultural relativism is another idea pathogen that basically disarms people from being able to take clear positions about things that should be obvious to a 3-day-old pigeon. Is it okay to cut off the clitorises of five-year-old girls? Is a society that allows that, is that a superior society to one that doesn't allow that? Well, according to our super smart Western academics, well, who are you to judge the mores of another culture? And therefore, that disarms you from making moral judgments and therefore fighting against grotesque violations of morality. Radical feminism, biophobia, the inability to accept biological reality. So all of these idea pathogens have created this perfect multi-pronged mechanism by which people can no longer think. And therefore, we end up in exactly the situation that we're in today.
So what is interesting, and you mentioned this in your metaphor at the beginning, people refuse to acknowledge we even have a problem. And that's what I think is most disturbing. It'd be one thing if we debated what the solution would be, but you have one side that acts as if the revolution has never had more spirit, and the other side that's actually properly diagnosing that our civilization is collapsing from within.
Exactly right. All right. So again, and hence my example with, you know, the cancer, right? You have to recognize, as the old cliche says, the first step is to recognize that there's a problem. So let's put it in concrete language. For about 30 years now, I've been warning the West about exactly what we're seeing. And I'm not saying this to be gleeful so that I can be patted, attaboy, you were right. But it's because I'm so frustrated at the fact that we are finding ourselves where we are when we could have avoided all this. So let's take a concrete example. If you let into your country hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who do not share any of the foundational values on which the host society is built, what do you think is going to happen? So let's make it more concrete. But there are many nonpartisan, in many cases, woke global surveys that when they do surveys in countries where perpetual peace reigns, such as Pakistan and Yemen and Lebanon and Syria and Algeria and Libya and Egypt, you find about 95 to 99% Jew hatred. So let me explain this for people who may not know what that means. So if I sample 1,000 people in Egypt, between 950 to 990 of the sampled people will express great disdain and hatred towards Jews. So now if you let in 100,000 of those people, is that going to result in greater safety for Jews in the host country or lesser safety? So it doesn't take a fancy professor such as myself to be able to connect the dots, right? But we refuse to say that. The reason why we refuse is because it appears gauche to most Westerners to make such a statement. That makes you sound as though you're a bigot and a racist. But listen, I have more Muslim friends than most people will ever meet. And I perfectly recognize that there are mean Jews and nice Jews. There are mean Muslims and nice Muslims. But we're talking here about foundational values. Does a culture that says throw gays off rooftops, is that a culture that is superior to one that celebrates all year long, queer identity? You know, it doesn't take much to put the dots together.
So let's just kind of isolate that example. It's largely, though, you call it suicidal, which it is, and I'm trying to understand the psychology of it and maybe, you know, help us out here, doctor, because if you just take a sampling of, you know, 100 secular Jews in America, 80 to 90% of them would want more immigration even from people who hate them. So explain that one to me.
So I'll explain it by drawing an analogy. So in Quebec, the biggest foundational existential threat to Quebecers is that their language is going to die, right? So they view the prism of everything in life through the mean English people are going to sweep us aside with their English, and therefore we have to find any way to resist. And so here's what the Quebec government did many years ago. They said, here's a great idea. Why don't we let in hundreds of thousands of people who are perfectly antithetical to our values in Quebec, but at least they speak French. So when they come to behead you, at least they say bonjour before they behead you. And therefore, don't worry about it. It will all work out. So it's the exact same principle with the super smarmy liberal Jews that you're speaking of. They have an identity that says we are infinitely tolerant. But you know why they're infinitely tolerant? Because they grew up in the Upper East Side of New York City, where they didn't know that these things happened. They didn't grow up where mean Middle Eastern Professor Gad Saad grew up. But I grew up in the Middle East, and I know that what they started with me in 1975 in the Middle East will eventually find its way to the Upper East Side.
Yeah, we have a good amount of time to unpack this. So some people say that it's just mass delusion, or that it's ideology that can then basically trump, no pun intended, reality. That's my current working hypothesis, is I underestimated how powerful ideology can be to basically overrule material reality.
Absolutely right. And as you know, and I think you might have maybe quoted me, I heard you on Megyn Kelly talking about it. One of the things that I argued makes all of these idea pathogens similar to each other is that they free us from the pesky shackles
yes,
of reality.
That's I use your phrase great. All the time. That's right.
Right. And I remember when I heard you say that, I said, hey, wait a minute, that's my phrase. Well, what I'm saying there is, look, equity feminism is a great idea. We should all be equal under the law. We'd all subscribe to that idea. The problem becomes when radical feminism says, in the pursuit of that laudable goal, let's argue that men and women are indistinguishable from each other. Well, I could chew gum and walk at the same time. I could be all for important social goals without raping and murdering truth. Regrettably, most progressives are unable to do those two things at the same time.
That then requires almost a spirit to want to redefine what is already existing, not to understand the natural world, but to remake it in some image, whether it be an egalitarian image or a totalitarian one. But Doctor, plug your book here for a second.
So the one that I've been mostly talking about now is The Parasitic Mind, How Infectious Ideas Are Killing Common Sense. And the most recent one, released 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, is The Sad Truth About Happiness, 8 Secrets for Leading the Good Life.
I want to ask you about that. We live in the most unhappy times. People are more suicidal and less joyful than ever before. And I can't wait to read that. So Dr. Saad, what do you say to the people that say the West's best days are ahead? They've never been able to destroy the West before. And all of this is just a temporary challenge.
I would say that optimism is well-founded as long as we recognize the problem and are willing to implement the solutions to solve the problem. If not, we will die eventually. It may take 50 years, it may take 100, it may take 500, but the West will self-implode.
And I mean, just looking at all the way back to Nietzsche, who said God is dead and said that your foundational values basically are gone, lamenting, the death of God. That seems to be prophetic, because if you were to ask somebody on the side of the street in New York City, what are the foundational values of the West? You're going to get many different answers, right? Some people would say, well, the foundational values of the West is LGBTQ plus stuff. Like, wait, hold on a second. Like, that's what makes the West great, is, drag queens for kids.
Twerking drag queens.
No,
twerking
drag queens and thongs for kids. I have to be more specific. Fidelity Charitable released its latest giving report. According to the report, its account holders in 2022 recommended $11 billion to nonprofits in the mix, Planned Parenthood. In fact, according to the report, Planned Parenthood was just the sixth most popular nonprofit among Fidelity Charitable account holders last year. Does that upset you? What upsets me too. Open a giving account with an organization that shares your values. Visit donorstrust.org/Charlie to learn more about Donors Trust. That's donorstrust.org/Charlie to discover how you can partner with a giving account provider that shares your values. I love Donors Trust. I encourage you guys to look at it right now. They're excellent. Donorstrust.org/Charlie. Dr. Saad, part of it is because we're going through an identity crisis. If you were to ask somebody on a random street in America, as I said, what does the West stand for? You'd get all sorts of answers. What do you think the West actually does stand for now? What is the identity of the West?
Currently or historically?
Well, both.
Historically, individual freedoms, individual dignity, personal responsibility, presumption of innocence, freedom of conscience, freedom of speech, freedom of inquiry. Those are the deontological foundational values that allow a society to flourish. once you start rejecting individualism to pursue collectivism, you end up with trouble. I come from such a culture that was perfectly organized along tribal lines. Everything in Lebanon is viewed through the prism of which religion you belong to. And so it's not a good experiment to run. It's also called Rwanda. It's also called Syria. It's also called Iraq. Right. So individual dignity. Yes, you could be a faith-based person. That's great. But don't impose your will on other, hence freedom of conscience, freedom of speech. We don't care if your feelings are hurt. Freedom of speech is an absolutist value. I mean, short of inciting violence, everything goes. Charlie, I'm Jewish. With my personal history in the Middle East, I support the right of Holocaust deniers to spew their utter nonsense. Why? Because I recognize that to have free speech, you have to tolerate racists, imbeciles, falsehood spreaders. That's the price you pay to live in a truly free society. And we've lost that. Currently, the number one thing that unites the West is trying to mitigate the hurt feelings of some marginalized groups. Now, this doesn't mean that I don't believe in the goal of being a kind person. I don't go out of my way to hurt people's feelings. But if in the pursuit of truth, I end up hurting your feeling, so be it. Suck it up, grow a pair, and move on.
So Dr. Saad, some people would say, more traditional conservatives, they would agree with you as the endpoint, but they would argue that the West's own values are temporarily enjoyable, but they're not sustainable, and the values will be used against them. For example, freedom of speech is used against itself, or let's just say the neutral public square, and that's where we get drag queens, or that's where we get grotesque LGBT type stuff. What do you have to say to the criticism? I'm sure you've received it by some people that would say the West is actually a victim of its own once values being turned against itself, tolerance turning into mass migration.
Exactly right. And that's why Karl Popper's infamous or famous paradox of tolerance is a quote that I have in The Parasitic Mind, where basically I'm paraphrasing what he said. He said, look, yes, of course, open, free societies should tolerate all sorts of stuff, but cannot tolerate the intolerable. In other words, imagine an experiment where those who don't believe in freedom of speech were able to overpower you. And
that's where we're going. Yes.
And that's why I wrote that tweet, right? So it's really nice and beautiful to be tolerant and empathetic and, you know, peace through reggae music. But we live in the real world. We don't live in Lex Fridman world. And therefore, you have to be grounded in reality.
Yeah. And so that's really the question right now. And let me just say on the free society side, I don't like to call it the right or the left. Just people that want a free society. And there's all sorts of different flavors of that. I want a free society, you do too. How do we respond when the people in the majority are actually different forms of tyranny or authoritarianism, and they say they want a free society as long as they can get rid of us, right? So they want freedom as long as you can get rid of the non-believers. Is it time for us to use political power against these people? The response is hotly debated right now.
Again, it speaks to what I wrote in the tweet, which is you can't tolerate that which seeks your ultimate demise. And it's not you being bigoted, and it's you being practical and living in the real world. That's it, bottom line.
Dr. Saad, tell us about your dialogue with Lex Fridman.
Well, there wasn't much of a dialogue. Mr. Love to Love, I'm in love with all that's love, and I'm loving love. Basically, who's open to having conversations with everyone, when I critiqued his faux positivity stuff, the first thing he did was to block me. I would have thought that someone who's so in love with love would have said, hey, why don't you come on my show and let's discuss whether, you know, my positions are incorrect or not. But apparently he's now blocking anybody who follows me. I don't have a beef with him. I don't know him. I've never met him personally. But I'm someone who is easily, as the kids say, triggered by, forgive me, I hope I can use that word, pure bull. Okay. That angers me because I know that bad ideas have devastating downstream negative consequences. So if you have a platform the way that he does, and he's preaching all day from, you know, above, you know, he's eternal. He looks down on the mortal Palestinians and Israelis and simply says, hey guys, come on, all religions preach love. Why can't you find your pathway to love? That upsets me because only a completely 3-year-old pigeon speaks in that language. And sorry, oops, I used the R word. But right. So that's what upsets me. It's nothing personal. People think that when I go after someone, I'm being mean or I'm being the Middle Eastern mean guy. It's nothing. I'm attacking your ideas, your positions. We might go to dinner together and we might actually find that we really like each other. But in the arena of the public square, if you put out ideas, other people will consume them and either agree with them and disagree with them. And I happen to greatly disagree with the, as the British people say, the shite that this guy espouses.
So you would summarize his position of why can't we just get along type thing while we're in the midst of a mortal combat for the West? Would you?
Right. Where 1,400 people had their eyes gouged out, children decapitated, or we may disagree as to the extent of the decapitation, as some of the Queers for Palestine people have explained to me over, you know, over messages. But, you know, women were raped. And this guy comes along and says, you know, he pulls back his lesson from kindergarten and he says, hey, guys, come on, caring is sharing. And why can't we? Oh, my goodness. If only the militia in Lebanon, when we escaped because we were about to get decapitated, if only those militia had been exposed to the profundity of Lex Fridman, we could have still been living in Kumbaya in Lebanon. So if you see me speaking now with kind of a spicy tone, it's because it's this kind of garbage thinking that gets us into it. Ideas don't just exist in this beautiful Platonic ideal world. They have consequences. So when this idiot goes around spewing this stuff, it has consequences, and therefore I go after him.
Understandably. And I will say that there is a fair amount in the intellectual community online, this unwillingness to accept that, you know, there's a Hobbesian wrinkle to nature, and it's really nasty and brutish and dare I say short, and they tend to live in the clouds. That's something a lot of academics like kind of gravitate towards. Again, I don't know Lex personally. I find his show interesting at times, but it doesn't surprise me that he or people like him are saying that when we're, you know, just weeks removed from some of the most heinous violence. And also just the reality, there's also this like fake egalitarianism or equivalent that he makes, like, oh, well, both sides. Comment on that, Dr. Sad.
Yeah. So look, I'm a professor of marketing, so I understand one or two things about persuasion strategies. So Lex thinks that the optimal way to increase his market share, and maybe he's right, because he certainly has a larger platform than most people who are in that space. He believes that by never taking a position that might alienate someone, this is how he can straddle the fence and be a fence sitter. But guess what? The people who matter in life, the people who shape history, are not fence sitters, right? People love Christopher Hitchens, not because he went around saying, love is love, hug your neighbor, share an apple. He was a honey badger, right? And Winston Churchill didn't say love is love. And even bad actors in history also took positions. So the world is shaped by anything but fence sitters. But Lex, and I'm presuming here, I'm not in his mind, I think he thinks that the right positional strategy for him to take in order to maximize his audience is to never say something that might alienate someone. And therefore, by always equivocating, by always appearing tempered, then I could be friends with everyone. Look, by disposition, I'm a very, very warm, affectionate, happy person. But I also, for better or worse, I also come to the world with a honey badger attitude. In other words, I will never violate my sense of authenticity for some pragmatic purpose. I will never speak from this side of my mouth and this side of my mouth because I want more followers. And frankly, that's the reason why people gravitate to my message, because I'm all, you can trust that I'm going to tell you how I see it. Lex thinks otherwise. Power to him.
How's your life been lately? If it feels like mine, it's a never-ending hustle. The constant juggling of responsibilities, the endless to-do list. And now I'm not even talking about how it affects overall well-being, sleep, productivity, and immune system. Stress slowly infiltrates your life, silently robbing you of magnesium, a vital mineral your body depends on. The vicious stress magnesium deficiency cycle. Have you heard about it? In terms of stress spikes, your body loses magnesium, Sleep becomes elusive, energy and productivity plummet, and stress levels skyrocket. More magnesium escapes your body. So how do you break the cycle? Listen up. I found a game changer. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. Magnesium Breakthrough contains all 7 forms of magnesium, which might support stress management by promoting muscle relaxation, regulating the nervous system, controlling stress hormones, enhancing brain function, boosting energy, and most importantly, improving sleep. I take it 2 capsules before bedtime. It's amazing. Bioptimizers is so confident in their products that they offer you a risk-free 365-day money-back guarantee. If you don't see results, simply claim a refund. No questions asked. It's a win-win. Visit magbreakthrough.com/Kirk and use enter code KIRK10 for 10% off any order for a limited time only. Receive special gifts with purchase. This offer is only available at magbreakthrough.com/Kirk. Do not miss an opportunity to improve your well-being in life. That is magbreakthrough.com/Kirk. Then I must ask, how do we get the West to wake up and how do we fight this conflict or this war? Because you said something that someone might think is a contradiction. You said on one hand, you want to live in a free society that allows Holocaust deniers or whatever the ability to speak. But you also said we shouldn't tolerate that which destroys you. How do we use prudence to identify which is which, and how do we respond to the left eating itself?
So even for a deontological principle like freedom of speech is, I mean, technically speaking, is not an absolutist principle, right? There is an asterisk that says, well, yes, freedom of speech, but you can't libel and defame someone. Yes, freedom of speech, but you can't use that when you know, the proverbial, you know, cry fire in a theater. Yes, freedom of speech, but you can't say, hey, let's go at the corner of 7th and 18th and when the Jews are coming out of the synagogue, let's beat them up and kill them, right? So even for something as absolutist as freedom of speech, it comes with a certain asterisk. So the same applies for your grand question. Yes, the way that we adjudicate ideas in a free society is through vigorous debate, but you can't tolerate an ideology that says, hey, once I get in sufficient numbers and I have enough powers, I will absolutely eradicate every single foundational tenet on which you're built. So we can be, it's not inconsistent. It's not, so for any deontological statement, there's always a few asterisks that explain the boundary conditions. So this is all good. There's no problem there.
So then what is the battle plan then, Dr. Sad? You think deeply about this. You're a honey badger. You know, what are the 2 or 3 marching orders for the everyday person, the advocate for a free society?
Yeah, I thank you. I love that question. So in chapter 8 of The Parasitic Mind, I have a whole bunch of, exactly to your question, calls to action. The most important of which, I think the one that sticks in people's minds, is when I say activate your inner honey badger. And the reason, you know, we've used the word honey badger in this chat a lot, but let me just explain it for some of your viewers and listeners. The honey badger has been officially ranked as the fiercest animal in the animal kingdom. Well, that's a big title, right? I mean, there are a lot of, you know, laudable competitors that would want to get that mantle. Well, the reason why it is so fierce, it's because it's absolutely dogged in how it defends itself. It is the size of a small dog, and yet lions will stay away from it because it is so fierce and ferocious. So what does it mean when I say activate your inner honey badger? I'm not talking about a call to violence. I'm saying that if there are foundational principles that you think are worth saving, then be a honey badger and defend them, right? There is nothing wrong in you saying, I don't want twerking drag queens to teach my 6-year-old about queer whatever sex, right? There is a time and place for anything. So have confidence in your convictions. But here is the beauty of a lot of these idea pathogens. They've convinced most people that any blowback to any of their positions makes you a transphobe, a sexist, a misogynist, a toxic masculinity guy, an Islamophobe. And people are more afraid to be labeled that than to die, right? And therefore they keep quiet. But the reality though is, here's some optimistic words. The reality is the silent majority hates this stuff. But unfortunately, much of the silent majority have lost their testicular fortitude and they haven't been able to find their spines yet. Once they find their testicles and they find their spine, that's when we will win the war. Until then, we will continue to go towards the abyss of infinite lunacy.
I love it. And I think what you're getting at, Dr. Sad, is, and you said this previously, one of the kind of belief limitations I have when talking to free society advocates is they say, but I think of myself as a tolerant person, and therefore I don't know how to be intolerant to the other side. And I think you've articulated it perfectly, which is if you do not stand against the thing that wants to murder you and wants to kill you, then you will cease to exist and there will be no ideals of which you can rest your laurels on, right? And you're also—
Exactly.
Yeah, please.
I was just going to say, I mean, I recently have been really going after, as a manifestation of lunacy and parasitic thinking, the queers for Palestine. And so I drew an analogy and I called it the geese for foie gras, right? I mean, think about how parasitized your mind must be to be queers for Palestine. If your foundational identity is to be a queer person, which is, hey, great, more power to you. Do you prefer to live in queer-friendly Tel Aviv? Or do you prefer to live in a place where they've got this really gravity-based conversion program where they take you to the top of the buildings and they introduce you to this beautiful liberating concept called gravity? So imagine how misdirected you must be if your foundational identity is your queerness and you're for queers for Palestine, which specifically abhors your identity. That's the problem we're facing. By the way, that's why I get engaged in the public arena, because believe me, I already lead a very stressful life as a professor. But the reason why I get engaged is because I know what's coming down in the final train station, and it's not pretty. That's what I escaped from in 1975.
Well, you and I have one thing in common. I didn't escape anything except being from the communist state of Illinois. But I spent a lot of time on college campuses, and I do also see what's coming. I see the rank and file, and I try to warn people, and it doesn't always – I'm not always believed, right? I'm like, hey, you realize 5 years ago, Dr. Sad, I told a group of wealthy donors in Palm Beach that men can give birth will be a predominant viewpoint in the American government within a decade, and they thought I was crazy. In fact, these donors to Stanford, Yale, Princeton, and Harvard said, Charlie, please stop exaggerating our institutions. This idea that men can give birth will never latch on. This is just a fringe idea. So you and I have that in common, Dr. Sad.
My good sir, I'm. By the way, I admire greatly your work. You truly are doing God's work, as they say. But if I can do a one upmanship on you, I predicted that in 2002.
Yeah, I was.
Right. I mean, there's the
9 years old. So
you were 9 years old. So. But more power to you, because what you are exhibiting there is what's called extrapolating to the boundary condition, right? If you basically say that, hey, your genitalia does not define your biological sex, then you easily can jump epistemologically to, of course, men can bear children and of course men can menstruate. So kudos to you for being a sharp thinker.
I really want to talk about your book, Dr. Sad. You've been so generous with your time, but I have one final point on this that I want to is I mentioned this earlier. There was a story, we didn't talk about this though, there was a story in New York, young lady, 3:51 a.m. with her boyfriend, you know, a black guy goes by, slits the throat. I don't know if you saw the story. He was a BLM activist. You know, she doesn't administer first aid, not necessarily part of the story. Anyway, she refuses to give the police the race of the attacker because she didn't want to extrapolate, you know, racist thoughts. My point is this, Dr. Sad. There was another story out of Germany, young lady gang raped by Arab Muslims. She goes to the police, said that she was gang raped by white Germans because she didn't want to continue anti-immigrant hatred. Will reality itself save us? Because I'm not so sure.
That's exactly why I wrote the tweet. Those two examples that you said is exactly exemplars of that tweet. I'll give you another example that is well in line with your two wonderful examples. There was a Norwegian man who was raped by I think he was a Somali noble immigrant, a cultural enricher. He raped him. Then when he was going to serve a very minimal prison sentence and then be deported, the Norwegian man who was sodomized felt incredibly guilty and felt wrong that this guy was now going to be deported to Somalia, where he would have a rough life. So when your most basic foundational instincts of survival and your emotional system to seek revenge, to seek vindication, to right what's wrong is completely erased, we stand no chance. We're doomed.
I underestimated a couple years ago. I underestimated. So I didn't extrapolate it, as you say, how powerful ideology can be in the face of reality. Because in right-wing circles, there is this belief it'll get so bad, It'll fall apart. People will come back to sane policy. I no longer believe that. I now believe that a almost religious vision of utopia or ideology can trump reality.
So I have a Jewish woman who wrote to me. I talk about this in The Parasitic Mind. She wrote to me asking me, what is the view of Jews and Islam? So I sent her a clip where an imam was saying, oh God, why are you mean to us? Why didn't you give us the chance to kill the Jews rather than give that glory to Hitler? She wrote back to me and said, you see, Gad, by sharing that clip, you're no different from those extremists. So me telling a Jewish woman, answering her question, suggested that I was no different than the Islamic guy lamenting why he didn't have the pleasure of exterminating all Jews. She's a Jewish woman. Her grandparents were in the Holocaust, if I remember correctly. We're doomed.
Not only did you explain it, you sent evidence of somebody else explaining it for you, and you're the problem. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. As you know, following this week's horrible events, Israel is at war. The people of Israel are under attack from brutal terrorists targeting innocent civilians, including women and children. There's over 1,000 casualties, as well as kidnapping and infiltration of southern Israeli towns. Israel is now retaliating and could escalate with a ground offensive against Hamas militants. The situation is critical, which is why I'm partnering with our friends at the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews to rush emergency relief to the hardest hit areas. Call the special phone number 800-492-5454 to make an emergency donation. Again, that's 800-492-5454. Your emergency gift will help the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews save lives and provide critical essentials needed right now. During this dark time, the need in war-torn areas will be tremendous. The fellowship has extensive network of staff, partner organizations, and more. Immediately respond with life-saving security and support measures. We ask all people to pray for safety and protection. Call 800-235-887 as we rush urgent need right now to help Israel through the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. Dr. Sad, by the way, consider this an invite to come speak at America Fest. You'll love it. It's amazing.
Oh, my God. I'd love to.
Yeah. So we'll get that arranged if the Canadian government allows you to leave your country. you know, by the way, that's a whole nother topic you and I can dialogue on, the fall of Canada. Sure. Dr. Sad, I want to give you ample opportunity. Plug your book. I have several questions about it. 8 Keys to Live a Good Life. Tell us about it.
So the reason why I wrote that book, which is a big departure from The Parasitic Mind, was 2 reasons, basically. I would often receive emails from people saying, how is it that you always tackle these very serious issues, yet you seem to always be joking around? You have this very spicy way of speaking. You always seem to be happy. What's your secret, professor? So that was number one. Number two, whenever I would post something on social media that was prescriptive in nature, where I'm giving people advice, that would be some of the stuff that I noticed would get most impact. People would write to me and say, oh my God, when you told me to get off the couch, that changed my life. And I'm thinking, really? You needed me to tell you to get off the couch? That was the secret to your success? And so then I decided, well, why don't I have the audacity to see if I can put together a prescription of how to live a good life, which of course was quite daunting, because if there's anything that philosophers have written most about is exactly that topic. So could I write something that was fresh, unique, distinctive? And hopefully, if I've done a good job, I've done exactly that.
All right. You got to give us one of the 8 then, doctor. You got to tease us out. Give us one that.
Okay.
Just give us one.
Choose the person that you wake up to in the morning and that you return to at the end of the night to that bed. Make sure that that choice is a good one. I would not be nearly the person that I am today if I didn't know that I had a very happy, soulless at home, beautiful children, a fantastic supporting wife. I wouldn't be able to tackle the things that I do in life if I didn't have that. So if anything else, there are certain ways by which we can try to maximize the likelihood of finding the right spouse. So that would be one secret.
I agree. Let me ask you then a different question. What would you say is the root of the unhappiness of the West?
Well, I mean, certainly if I were to speak about progressives, I think that actually I talk about this in the book. I argue that there's a lot of research that shows that on average, conservatives are happier than progressives and liberals. And my argument is because when conservatives wake up in the morning, they do believe by definition, it's in the word conserve. They believe that there are certain foundational values that are worth conserving and fighting for. On the other hand, progressives are always existentially happy. The current society is evil, it's patriarchal, it's sexist, it's transphobic. So just around the corner, if we could make changes, will be unicornia. And so one is existentially happy, the other one is existentially happy. And so that explains in part the reason why conservatives tend to be happier than progressives.
From your research, what does, or experience even, What does gratitude have to do with a happy or unhappy life? I haven't read your book, but I would imagine you mentioned the word gratitude in your book.
Oh, big time. As a matter of fact, in the last chapter, I tell two stories. I'll only mention one here. So probably the greatest guest I've ever had on my show, that's saying a lot because I've had many incredible guests, is a gentleman that no one's heard of. His name is David McCallum. He spent 29 years in prison for a crime that he was eventually exonerated of. And so I was talking to him on the show and I said, David, you must be Buddha. How is it that you are able to be filled with grace? You don't have any sense of vengefulness. You're a much better man than I am, David, because I would want to burn the world down because of the injustice that was done to me. So here is his answer, which is filled with gratitude. He said, well, you know, my sister has been stricken with cerebral palsy and she's been bedridden for many years. And yet she finds the ability to smile every day. So if she can smile, then really what I went through is not that bad. So even a guy who had 29 years stolen from him was able to have the mindset of gratitude. So of course, gratitude is terribly important in leading a good life.
That is well said. And if you are thankful for what you have, you're inherently less angry. And if you go to college campus, you get a diploma or a degree in ingratitude. Dr. Sad, I hope to see you at our big event coming up. It is 8. To repeat the title, please.
The Sad Truth About Happiness, 8 Secrets for Leading the Good Life. Keep doing the great work you're doing. Thank you.
Thanks for being so generous, Dr. Sad. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder.
Just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.